Welcome back to the Lenten Rouge Cycling Podcast, presented by Join Cycling. For the last of our double headers, Paris-Nice and Tirreno Adriatico wrapping up today. Really exciting stage in Paris-Nice and a sprint stage in Tirreno Adriatico. So we'll start with the main course, Paris-Nice. To remind you of the GC position going into the stage, Brandon McNulty had a 4-second lead ahead of his compatriot Matteo Jorgensen on Visma Lisa bike. Schjelmose was in third on 35 seconds, 1 second ahead of Remco Evenepoel in fourth. Plapasaurus was in fifth on Jaco Alula on 47 seconds. Roglic in sixth on 121. So a big gap from fifth to sixth. And also probably in ambitions from fourth to downwards, because realistically, the three people or four people that could win this race were McNulty, Jorgensen, Schjelmose, and Evenepoel. And yes, we'll talk about the rest of the top 10 later. But this, before we get into the stage profile, Benji, it's almost having that 4-second lead's almost like a horrible lead, Benji, going into this stage, because it on one bonus sprint, you can be gone.
Yeah, for certain. And on one end, you can also say, okay, being in the lead for a chaotic stage like this, not ideal, because your team might have to clean up a lot of stuff that happens right as I try and get in the breakaway that are closing GC, stuff like that. But on the opposite of that, I also feel like there's so many people close in GC that have an active chance of winning this race that UAE might not have to solve that all by themselves at the start. So I would have expected a Visma to try and make sure no Quickstep rider is getting the breakaway, a Quickstep rider maybe hoping a Visma rider doesn't get in there, stuff like that. So it in my head, it wouldn't have to all come down to UAE in that breakaway formation. But like you said, like we said a few times already, this last Paris-Nice stage every single year is pretty much a banger. So I was hoping for something here today that would be early action once again. And let's just say the early action did not.
Do we do the profile?
No, we didn't yet.
All right, we'll do the profile. 110Ks from Nice to Nice. They go do a lap around the northern backcountry roads in that region. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Congrats, I can count today. 6 categorized climbs, mostly category, well, 3 cat 2s, 2 cat 1s. They're all, the first 3, for brevity, 6Ks, 5%. No flat, literally no flat in between them. Then there's another longer descent before the Côte de Paix, 6.5K, 7%, the longest climb of the day. That's where Van Aert will push a heavy pace for Roglic and reduce it to 5 guys with Daniel Felipe in 22, if my memory serves me correctly. Bit of a ridgeline, La Turbie kicker after that. Then an intermediate sprint at the end of the Col d'Ez. There's about a million different ways up Col d'Ez, and they're all called the same. Should be illegal. 1.6K is 9.1%. And then another descent into town before they do the Col de Castelchemin out of town. 3.8Ks, 8.1% for a descent into the Promenade des Anglais in Nice. So brutal stage. And yes, Benji, what was pre-coverage the action looking like?
Well, we expected early action. We hoped for early action. And let's just say the breakaway formation was already fun because there was quite a long breakaway formation phase because it happened in multiple phases. We get to that first climb, like you mentioned, Col de l'Hiver, 108 kilometers to go. So very early in the stage, since it's a very short stage. Multiple attacks, including Victor Campenaerts of Lotto, Laurens Piffy, Johan Jakobs, those three riders trying to get in a breakaway. And eventually on that first climb, this leads to Campenaerts going solo because he ends up dropping Johan Jakobs and Laurens Piffy. So solo ride from that point onwards for Campenaerts. But behind, people weren't sitting still. There we saw action along the lines of a breakaway that became a chasing group behind Campenaerts. Loud on the plus for Ineos. So I like that. Ineos trying to cook something up, as in trying to put a rider ahead so that maybe he can help out Bernal in a later phase of the stage, a satellite rider for them. Fabio Bau for Bahrain also in here. Maybe the same question, maybe the same idea that they have. Maybe a stage win, but also maybe as a satellite rider for Santi Buitrago in this stage. Also not impossible. Guerrero, Barta Jacobs, Movistar. Battistella Scaroni for Astana. Pacher for Groupama. Armirai for Decathlon. Izaguirre, it's rainy on this kind of stage. I dig it for Cofidis. Evan Costieu, your man, for Arkea in this breakaway too, has been pretty good in the early phases of this year. And Harry Sweeney for EF. And The most important factor of the breakaway has not been named yet, because that comes into play now, which is another rider that attacks behind and bridges towards that chasing group. That is Mads Pedersen from the peloton, eventually links up with that group. And man, that was a brutal attack, and also a very valuable rider to be ahead for Skelmos in this stage. But talking about brutal attacks, do you expect to brutally attack me on the Flandrian Challenge next week?
I do, in fact. Yeah, I've been doing...
Really?
Well,
fuck me.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm not going to do the old, no, I got bad legs. Remember, what's the Roglic? What was the Roglic with Enric Mas? He like pretend he had leg cramps in the Vuelta, and then they have like a ramp at the end. You just cook everybody, put the turbo on. No, I'm not going to do that to you, Benji. When we're coming up to the Koppenberg,
mate,
the gloves are off.
I'll just try to stay upright. That's my goal on the Koppenberg.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't care about you attacking. I'm trying to stay alive.
I'm also trying not to crash. I also have a special outfit, a throwback outfit I'll be wearing one of the days.
Oh, no.
That you'll probably enjoy from... It's fish-related. He's a former... So, anyway, I've been... That's a long way of saying I've been doing the Joint Cycling Classics program. I penciled it in. Well, not penciled it. It's a mobile application, so it's a bit more digital than penciling it in. But you know what I mean. I put in the details of the rides we're doing. I set the date, how long I have. It's about 6-7 weeks ago in the app. Classics training program, how much elevation there is. Bang, spat it out. Put in my availability per week, my level, about intermediate, maybe a little bit generous to myself, but it's about right intermediate, and it was perfect. Like, the sessions were hard, but always like doable, because mentally I can't, with covering the race every day with other stuff, I can't every day literally just cook myself doing super intense intervals. I've tried it before. It doesn't work for me whatsoever. So the Joint Cycling plan really made sense, and there was intervals that even replicated what I think we're going to be doing next week. So if you want to check out the Joint Cycling app, there's a 30-day free trial available for LRCP listeners. No credit card required, and then you get a 6-month discounted subscription after that 30 days has expired. And we'll see. The proof will be in the pudding next week. Will I get around the course fine? I'm really happy about where I am and in a good place with it. So I'd encourage you all to check it out. If you have a goal you want to prepare for coming up, maybe the end of spring or summer is just around the corner, even though there was 50 centimeters of snow outside my house today.
I'll be using it to try and get a better time on Col d'Ordino when I come to your place for the Giro. I reckon I should... was it 123 or something my time, or 131 my time last time? I can do that by... I want to beat that by 15 minutes.
If you do the stamina plan or the thresh or the FTP plan, there's a few plans that really suit that. But I'd encourage you all to check it out. Various plans for different goals like that. 1 hour climb versus punchy hills next week. All right, Mads Pedersen, clearly little Trek were up to something in Paris-Nice. Maybe they just wanted to be at the front. Certainly Jorgensen and Remco and Quickstep, they wanted to be at the front for every descent, because it's wet, it's cold, everyone's tired, it's hectic, there's no flat, and these downhills are really, really tricky. And there's a crash with 65Ks to go. Santi, his second crash of the week. This takes him out of the race completely. Very, very unfortunate. I really think he had the legs for a podium here in GC. Genius also crashes. C-Rod was also down, but I don't know whether he finished the race. But I know Genius and Santi were gone.
Exactly, and that crash actually led to the split that happened afterwards, or Remco said in his post-race interview that this crash led to the peloton splitting up, could just also be because Little Trek was pushing it at the front. And that split was actually pretty noticeable, because Little Trek pushing happened with, I think, Otto Vergaarde, which, credits, I did not expect him to be there if it's him, because if it's him, that's a hell of a performance. Split in the descent, which means that the front part of the peloton includes Vergaarde, Skelmose, Roglic, Vlasov, Jorgensen, Kelderman, if I recall, then Evenepoel, Groschartner, McNulty, Plapp, and Chris Harper. I think that's all of them. Might have missed one left or right, but I think it's important to mention here that who's not here? Gall was not there, because whenever something happens in a descent...
He's never made a descent split in his life.
He can't do it, even if his life depends on it. So he's always behind in a descent. Bernal was behind as well, I think.
Yeah, he was.
And then every Remco Domestique, which is not ideal if you want to blow up a climb later in the race. So from that point onwards, Remco completely isolated. Not sure if they tried to put any of their Domestiques in the breakaway at the start of the stage. I didn't see the breakaway formation in the broadcast. If they did and Visma blocked them from doing that, then fine. Otherwise, I would have probably seen that as an idea to get them ahead before this shit can occur later in the stage. But hey, we've got that action. We've got that little track pushing in. It all comes into play now, eh? Because who's in the group ahead? Yes, Campenaerts is still running ahead in G1. The second group's still a chasing group, but with Mats Pedersen. And when they catch Mats Pedersen on the Côte de Belles Alpes, which is the next climb, with about, if I had to guess, about 55, 60 kilometers to go, roughly, when they catch Pedersen, that man turns into a Wout van Aert-like super domestique, right?
Yeah, although somewhat surprising because on all the climbs this week, Schelmers has not been the best. On the Bruis stage, on the stage yesterday or the day before, I can't remember. Yeah, the stage yesterday where Roglic attacked, Schelmers was sliding. So I was thinking they want to defend. I mean, good on them. I guess they're going for the win. But by opening the race and making it so hard, I don't think it actually suited his podium ambitions versus Remco too much.
I might agree against Remco, but I also feel in the opposite way that, first of all, I like that the team took it up and that they were hammering it and they were trying everything to turn this upside down. Because maybe Schelmose says, okay, I was here to try and win this race, so I might as well try it on the last day, even if it loses me my chances to maybe get the podium here. But on the other hand, I started this stage watching, saying, okay, I'm expecting an Emco to pass Schelmose. The likelihood of Schelmose podiuming depends on whether he can drop McNulty for me.
Yeah, and they look about equal. They've looked about equal this week. So, okay, what was the GC gap before this stage between the two of them? It was 40 seconds or so. And I'm not sure Schelmose looked that much stronger. But yeah, good on them for trying, but I'm not sure it was the best thing for Schelmose, to be honest. But listen, without them, maybe Remco, because Remco, his team has been half the time this week, or maybe over half the time, nowhere. Like, they're off the back in a split now. He's got no one to launch Côte de Paix. I think he said after the stage that was his plan anyway. So Trek basically fulfilled that function for him. But there's no one even to pace super hard on the base of the climb, like Van Wilder to a 1 kilometer really hard pull. So he just attacks off Pedersen's pace pretty early in the climb. And he has Jorgensen in the wheel. McNulty's there. Schelmose, he like follows gradually. He's just going to try and hope the group dynamics ahead. Meeting come back gradually. Yep. Roglic not looking too good. Remco goes again. This time Jorgensen's really in the wheel. McNulty not looking too good. Stops again. And I was thinking, is Jorgensen going to counter? And then third time he goes all in on Côte de Paix. And this time McNulty can't respond. It's before a left-hand hairpin. He sprints into the hairpin and sprints out. And the two sprints kind of do for McNulty. And he never gets back onto the wheel. Jorgensen goes. Even after he was taken a bit by surprise, I think, because he was in front of Remco in the train when Groschartner and Harper were pacing. UAE also, Almeida Vine dropped really early today.
Almeida, when it rains, allergic.
Still finished top 10 GC, though. That's all that matters.
Well, how far is he in the pecking order last week? Then again, he was sick in Algarve, so maybe this is still a consequence of that if we play advocate of the devil.
Maybe.
I can't lose my Portuguese fans, Patrick. Come on.
Maybe. And so basically, McNulty's trying to close it. He's hang on. But if you remember the other stages, he kind of holds it and then really falls back on these climbs. And Pei is a lot longer than the other climbs they've done so far or attacked on. Vlasov attacks over him and he gets quickly across to Remco and Jorgensen, who are now relaying. So now they're relaying on the climb. And we've got 2.5 serious climbs left.
Yeah.
This is all over for McNulty already.
At this point in the race, what were you expecting in the post-race interview from Vlasov? Was he going to demand the Tour de France leadership over Roglic at this point?
No, I didn't think so. He's like quite, in the interviews after the race, he seemed quite, tranquilo. But
about that, before we jump into the later phase, does the form that you see in Roglic versus Vlasov change anything when it comes to your view on what should happen in the future with Bora?
Well, yeah, if they both ride like this with Vlasov much better than Roglic in the next 1 week stage races. I mean, no, not yeah, I wouldn't make any definitive conclusions yet. Roglic looked terrible.
I think the Tour de France parkour doesn't necessarily fit Vlasov, but I would say that Hindley's the number one man right now when it comes to Bora.
Oh, yeah, Hindley's in better shape than both of them for the Tour parkour. Yeah, Hindley's leagues above. But I think they'll be hoping that this is not the best version of Roglic they'll get, because, like, he's had a few, and that will kind of round off that point. Roglic at this point is kind of, he looks cooked. He's like getting dropped by everybody, struggling to hang on, losing the wheel on 6%. He's gesturing to the car. He's cold. He's putting a gilet on rather deftly, I might add. He puts the gilet on a wet descent in the wind easily. And I was like, others could take note from that. But he looks really,
Hindley
really
could take note from
that. Yeah, Hindley, in fact. But yeah, he's had collapses on this stage before, but they were crash related. And then his cracking in 2022, he was still second on the stage.
Yeah.
25 seconds behind Simon Yates. It wasn't like this. So obviously something's gone wrong. Even if he was cold, a lot of other riders were cold as well. We'll focus on the main GC battle now. I was surprised Remco pulled so much, Benji, at this point, because the gap to Jorgensen, right, for him to win GC, the gap to Jorgensen's got to be, with Boney's in play, 30 seconds. To McNulty. He's got to put 30 seconds into McNulty and less into Jorgensen. I was surprised, because basically he and Jorgensen relay and just rip this gap open to like a minute.
Yep.
And he's still pulling before Koldez, where the intermediate sprint is. And then they get to that kicker, 1.6k's 9%. He pulls the whole climb. Were you surprised not to see him put Jorgensen in front and say, McNulty's behind, you haven't taken any bonus seconds yet, so you're still virtually not the leader on GC with like actual time. You pull on...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Koldez, so that you get the bonies and keep McNulty behind.
I think there's two sides to this. First of all, I feel like when it comes to Remco, we've asked this question quite a few times. It's usually in one-day races that we ask this question where he always just keeps pulling, and every now and then it does pay off. The way he dropped Lutsenko in the World Championships, the way he's dropped people before doing this has worked. So maybe that incentivizes him in his head to keep doing this and seeing if that works against Jorgensen on a mountain-like stage as well. So I think it's more that this is kind of the Remco way and he's not stepping away from that. Whether it's the best thing to do, I'm not so sure about that. But if we take a look at Matteo Jorgensen here, yes, Remco's pulling just as much, and Jorgensen is also like, he's also going to be like, okay, McNulty's now on a minute already. We've got Koldez to come. We've got Ketterscheman to come. Why am I pacing as much at the moment? That's also a question you can ask. Eh? You can also ask, why am I pacing right now? Maybe I should play even more defensively at this point and try and see if Remco just keeps pulling, because that's a likelihood when it comes to Remco. And then on Ketterscheman, maybe. Yeah, there's also that question. Obviously, it wasn't necessarily necessary towards the end, but I asked the same question about both riders in the situation, you know?
Yeah, just for Koldez, that was the one where I was like, it didn't make too much sense to me. It then makes sense later. So Remco paces the whole of Koldez, keeping that high pace. At this point, they're just ripping this gap open. I don't know if it went to 2 minutes or what, like, big, roughly. Big gap. to the group behind and over 130. And Jorgensen attacks for the 6 bonus seconds on top of there, gaps Remco and Vlasov and waits, basically.
Because
at this point, he could have gone clear, I'm pretty sure. Because on the descents, Jorgensen was like leaps and bounds ahead of the other two.
Jorgensen was definitely the best descender here, but I just saw no response in Remco. He didn't respond at all. So I was like, okay.
And they already reached an agreement.
I'm not sure about an agreement. I don't know, but first sign for me that Remco doesn't think he can drop Jorgensen. That's how I viewed that situation.
Yeah.
And
I think so.
And from that point onwards, I was like, oh, fuck. Is he actually going to just ride to the finish line with Jorgensen and try and go for the stage win on one end? I could understand that. It's in his head now. After he's attacked 3 times, he saw that Jorgensen responded relatively easily so far. And yes,
relayed.
Can that change on 3 kilometers of cold air? What, sorry?
Well, and Jorgensen relayed on Côte d'Epée. When McNulty was dropped, he didn't just sit in the wheel completely cooked. He relayed, and that's probably a bad sign if you're Remco, that he feels good enough to relay. So you're right. I think you're right. After Côte d'Epée, 3 big ones didn't work. I think he was thinking of stage win more at that point. And that's basically what happens, because they get to the Col de Quatre-Chemins after the descent. Jorgensen going so quick on that descent, this wet descent, knows every corner, every inch of the road, was gapping them on the descent. But Remco just goes into choo-choo mode and drops Vlasov, who wasn't relaying. And maybe he should have pulled, but probably not, because he got hard dropped anyway, really. But he, well, because he, with Roglic so badly dropped at this point by the chase group, Vlasov's now the best placed Bora GC rider, and he can move up GC positions ahead of the guys behind.
2 things here. I agree with your Vlasov thing, but on the other end, I was also thinking, why is Skelmoser pacing as much in group 2? Because I was looking at that situation of, yes, Vlasov could fight that podium, but I would try and get McNulty to try and close that, because if I'm Skelmoser, I want to try and drop McNulty on Quatre-Chemins, you know?
Oh, true. Yeah, because at this point, Remco has already got more than a second on Skelmoser. you're right. Like, it was odd to see Skelmoser and McNulty then relaying. Yeah, when you think it's McNulty's GC bid going up in flames.
Yeah.
You're right, now that I think about it. But I, at the time, I didn't really put 2 and 2 together. Maybe they're just trying to bring Vlasov back and make sure he didn't take their position. Quatre-Chemins, Remco paces, drops Vlasov. So really, I don't think Vlasov could have paced. I think he was on the limit anyway.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have made them go any quicker.
And on the first segments of Quatre-Chemins, before Remco even dropped him, I felt like he was getting gapped already.
Yeah,
even
yeah,
in the running cool. towards it, there was a moment where I felt like, okay, this man's about to parqueggio on Quatre-Chemins. It wasn't the parqueggio. He was still pacing quite hard, but you're right. And I'll be honest, I was hoping we'd at least see 1 attack still from Remco on Quatre-Chemins, because I don't know, man. I would have wanted to see at least 1, you know? Does that make sense? Because I can understand that he probably had already accepted the fact that he couldn't drop Jorgensen, because he probably noticed in that moment that that was the case. But I would have wanted to see a desperate move.
I mean, you never know how a guy's feeling, but I think he had a pretty good inkling that he wasn't going to drop him there. And even if he did get a gap on the descent, Jorgensen's going to come back or limit the losses, because you can even feel like when they knew Vlasov was cooked, because when you go around a corner, you accelerate into the steep section, not attacking, but you just look where the guy is. Is he right on the wheel? And they knew Vlasov was already giving space off the wheel. So I think Remco just wanted the stage. They go on the descent. You can see them talking. Remco says, I'm not going to pull unless I win the stage, I think, or worse to that effect. And Jorgensen starts celebrating, knowing he's not going to get attacked. And they roll across the line, Remco winning the stage. Very similar to Catalunya last year, with a Visma rider coming second in the stage, not contesting the stage victory, but winning GC, and Remco winning the stage, finishing second in GC. My point here, though, Benji, is...
You were going to call me Remco?
Yeah, I was going to call you Remco. Maybe next week. I'm not sure Jorgensen owed Remco anything for the stage win. Remco attacked him 3 times on pay, and Jorgensen then relayed. He didn't just sit on.
I fully agree, but I also think if they ride to the line, the 2 of them, on paper, Remco wins the sprint. Jorgensen is not a waste man when it comes to having a bit of a kick. He's shown some kick in Bessèges 3 years ago.
A waste man, he's been in the UK too long.
He's not a waste man. He's not a London bus. Anyway, when it comes to that sprint, I kind of expected Remco to win it anyway. Even because, like, you, if he had done an extra attack, if he would have tried all out 17 times or something, maybe then I would have leaped towards Jorgensen. But I think Remco would have gotten it anyway, to be honest.
Oh, I mean, Jorgensen could have attacked him on Quatre Chemins, maybe, but then Remco wouldn't have paced. So yeah, I can understand it. But that's why it's a gift. A gift is more meaningful when you don't have to do it. I don't think Jorgensen was obliged by the unwritten rules of the race to gift the stage win.
Is it a gift if you're not sure you're going to win it anyway? If it's not yours on paper?
I
disagree with calling it a gift.
I think it's a gift because I think Jorg could have put it into him on Chemin.
I don't see that.
I think the idea that Remco was much stronger than Jorgensen in this race and tactically lost it is wrong. I think Jorgensen was as strong, if not stronger, than Remco this race.
Based on what I saw, I put them relatively equal.
Yeah.
I see percentages maybe in one direction or the other, but whether he could have dropped them or not, I don't know, but calling it a gift, I wouldn't necessarily say, because it wasn't in Jorgensen's hands for me.
Okay.
If Jorgensen is the faster man going to the line, I would have said, sure, it's a gift, but he's not on paper.
Fair enough. You're right. Remco, he's in the flat sprints, he's very, very fast.
That being said,
he didn't contest
Jorgensen, in this specific stage last year, even on when he was on Movistar last year, already fucking good. He was second best rider on the road maybe last year, behind Pogacar, if I recall correctly. So to see him do this again on a stage that after last year fits him, but then, to be honest, well, he wins GC here. Like, he's not done winning for this year. He's fucking good. And they didn't make obvious mistake at Visma Liseberg this race. Both teams had bad luck when it comes to the time trial being in the rain. So it's not like Remco lost because of...
Yeah, I'm glad of that, actually.
Yeah. Imagine.
Yeah.
Imagine, like, the post-race interview.
If Visma were in UAE slot, then, you know, it would have been... Probably wouldn't have been as close as it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the stage. I'll just do the stage results. Remco wins ahead of Jorgensen, 50-second gap to Vlasov on his own in third. Shkel Moser leads out McNulty in fourth, 139 back. Battistella, I could have sworn it was Scaroni, but I guess it was Battistella in sixth. I swear it was Scaroni, but maybe I'm wrong. With Stora, Gold, Bernal. So Stora, Gold, Bernal all come back. Plapp's the only one. Well, not the only one, though. Shkel Moser and McNulty, but Plapp hangs on with that group. They're on 213. Even Vivarka, who was on that split, finishes well in 12th on the stage. Almeida 13th on 307 with Harper. Roglic finishes 17th on 404. Keldman crashed in the finish as well. So I think he didn't lose his top 10 on GC, though, from what I can see. How's that possible? Mathematically?
I don't know. Was in the last 3K?
Yeah, they gave him the last. He was in the last 3K, so he crashed in the run-in. So he only lost 2:13.
Is this the Sharkman thing? Was it the same stage in Paris-Nice 3 years ago, four years ago?
Oh, no, I think that was it wasn't in Nice when Sharkman crashed. It was an earlier stage.
Oh, okay. Because on a stage like this, sorry, but there shouldn't be any 3K rule on this.
There's a 3K rule for this. But the 3K rule is not a stage expected to be in a bunch sprint. It's a flat finish, I'm pretty sure. But Jesus, okay.
Mate, even Arate was 3K ruled in that Vuelta.
Happy for Wilco. He did ride well this week. Jorgensen wins GC, 30 seconds ahead of Evenepoel, 147 ahead of McNulty. McNulty holds on to third, so two Americans on the podium. Shkel Moser in fourth, 222, so he loses the spot. Vlasov up to fifth, 257. Plapp drops to sixth on 308, but I think he'll be happy with that. Okay, maybe he's like, oh, if I did X, did Y, could I have taken another 11 seconds on Vlasov? I don't know. I think coming in top 10 for Plapp like that. Also, he was just good all week, you know? Like, just there in G1, G2, thereabouts all week. I think this is his best GC performance in his pro career, like, by far. Not even close. Bernal, 403.
Better than UAE Tour. Because that was Echelons.
This is so much better than UAE Tour, even though he finished second or third there. Bernal 403, 1 second ahead of Kelderman in eighth. Kelderman 435, Gull 435, Roglic 533, Almeida actually finished at 11th, 608. Tejada completely falls out of GC. He was good earlier in the week. And Santi also crashed out, which was a shame. So a very interesting Paris-Nice, Benji, with a new winner and a rider in their first World Tour stage race for their new team.
That we mentioned a few times before the race, thought it was a really good fit to the parkour, but to actually see him deliver it against Remco and Roglic, who on paper beforehand went to it with a... Remco was the favorite going into the race. Roglic, we both kind of weren't sure what to expect with Roglic at Bora this year, and he comes into the race and is significantly worse than expected. Remco, I'd argue it was also worse than expected. His level was not what you'd expect Remco to be at in this race compared to the others, I would say. Because when you expect Remco in the discussion of the Tour de France, can he podium, can he win the Tour de France, stuff like that, he needs to be able to drop everybody in this race to do that, to do podium in the Tour de France battle.
Yeah, because could I imagine Hindley attacking on Quatre-Chemins today with his current legs? Yes.
Yeah.
I can. And, you know, he just finished second or third in Tirreno, and there's he and Ayuso are going, so there's Pogacar gets thrown in, Jonas, so yeah, it's tough. Like, Jorgensen is not even Visma's last climbing domestique in the Tour. Kuss is. Yep. So...
Jorgensen is the Wout van Aert replacement.
Yeah. Probably better, to be honest.
Yeah.
In the mountains.
Better than last year, for sure. Then 2022 is difficult.
22, was an unbelievable all-terrain vehicle. But in the mountains, I would say Jorgensen should be better. So
yep.
It's looking tough, but as I say, it's March, and you might be right, he's not in his best shape.
And sure, that tactical mistake was a thing. Yes, he lost time towards Jorgensen that day as a consequence of tactical decisions. But I think the weakest thing when it comes to Quickstep this week was one that I never really felt like they had an all-out plan, except for today when they said, okay, cut the pay, we're going to do that. And on the second last day, but before that, it felt like they were just kind of in it and seeing what happens and responding, and okay, it's other teams that need to do it. And that kind of felt a bit meh. I was from the team, I expect more than that. I expect like a thorough plan of, okay, we've got this team, we can attack there. The problem was they barely really had that team this week. I felt like Cataneo wasn't great. Their team was gone in two stages before they needed them. And yes, they were there on the easy mountaintop finish on Madon Tutel, but Cataneo wasn't, but Vervaeke was, Van Welder was, but I also expected more from Van Welder. Vervaeke was okay, I'd say, when it comes to level on Madon Tutel and on the stage today, where he rode away with Plap.
Today
he
was
in the chasing group, right?
Yeah, he finished on 303. He just was behind that split, but they just seemed so desperate to make up all the time in one go, and that allowed him to be counted, where in fact he could have approached this race Roglic style and defensive, and then played off others needing to gain time, because he was winning every sprint uphill or down or flat. But that's what I saw yesterday. They tried to gain back a big chunk of time yesterday, and then it ends up Vlasov going away rather than 500 meter uphill sprint, take 5 seconds on the road, take the bonus seconds, and then you're 12 seconds back or 13 seconds closer. And then today, even today, Côte de Paix, I was surprised, because I was like, one big attack on Caldez, take the bonus. Yep. You don't have to win by much then ahead of Jorgensen. Now we're talking a 10 second difference, and you've got bonus at the finish. So I think they tried to take the 40 seconds back in one chunk every time, and it actually allowed him to get counted. And the team was not good enough. Landa not being here was a big, big miss. But
also,
without
Landa missing, they should be here better anyway in support of Remco. This was not, like, this is not even Tour de France competition. This is on paper the B team of Visma when it comes to the support for Jorgensen. Jorgensen is the domestique in the Tour de France. UAE's here with McNulty, Almeida, who's allergic to rain. Vine, who has been pretty weak this year as well, sometimes also allergic to rain. There's just so much where I feel like, okay, this is the kind of teams where you should be better than this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Jorgensen was on a very good level. Like, I'm not surprised when I looked at
that. Yeah, for sure.
When I saw his data in Omloop, and I was like, oh, when he got caught, was he fading? And then no, he was pulling really, really strong in Omloop before the Bosberg and before the Moor. And it's just the fact the group behind just came back so fast. He wasn't collapsing, and his power was crazy. Then you look at his weight compared to Wout and Christophe. Look at the Paris parkour this year. Yep. It's suitable for him. I was like, he's going to do well.
Yep.
Because he's going really, really well. Even as evidence from the classics races. So I can't wait to see him in the upcoming classics and at the tour as well. What next for Jorgensen though, Benji? Does this create an expectation? We've spoken a lot about Remco, American winning, I think Landis and someone else, American won, Paris-Nice. But what now for Jorgensen? Does his role need to change? Should he be leading a Tour de Suisse instead of going to the Dauphiné as a domestique? What do you think?
Firstly, I want to say something else about a different American saying, why is Nelson Paulus not at Paris-Nice instead of Tirreno? That's question number one. But when it comes to Jorgensen, he won a one-week race now. Paris-Nice, very important one-week race. I think throughout the season, solid damn competition. This says something. Did I think it impossible beforehand? Not necessarily. I was expecting him to do well, but to be this strong, I might have expected him just a bit lower than that. But towards the Tour de France, firstly, his season is already successful, whatever happens from this point onwards. That's number one. Because winning Paris-Nice, it's already kind of what you won there.
It's
when
a career
it comes to progression.
It's one of the most the second most prestigious one-week race behind the Dauphiné, historically.
But I think he is more ambitious. When it comes to his being domestique at Dauphiné or Tour de France, I'm okay with that, to be honest. Like, yeah, he could go to Tour de Suisse. Yes, the parkour could fit him. I haven't actually looked at it in-depthly, but usual...
You'll have some mountains.
Usual Swiss parkours have mountains and time trials, which in my head fits with Jorgensen. Same counts for Romandy every now and then, depending on whether you have the hilly variant or the mountain plus TT variant of Romandy. And so, yeah, I feel like, yes, he can win those races, but I'm fine with him being combined in the Visma team for the Tour de France, because that's more important for the team. He's got his one-week race. Now, let's focus on getting Vingegaard at Tour de France victory. Getting him in Dauphiné also means that they get used to working together in that role when it comes to an actual GC situation. So I think that's good to have that at least once before we get to the Tour de France. When it comes to other goals in the future, one-day races, he's still in it. Like, it's not impossible that... isn't Visma sending their bloody A-team to Dwars door Vlaanderen according to the provisional start list of that bloody race? I'm like, Jorgensen could win something like that. Can Gent-Wevelgem, Jorgensen, I don't know.
No, he's not doing it. This year they're skipping Gent-Wevelgem to do Dwars door.
Okay. Like, E3, there could be a situation where he could be ahead in the same way as Omloop. Like, the Omloop situation is repeatable. So, I think winning a classic is possible. I think continuing winning one-week races. Do I believe he can lead a Grand Tour for Visma? He could, but he's also 180.
He could lead a Giro.
Yeah, he's also 180, so against Vingegaard, it will be difficult to show up and be better anytime soon, but he can lead another Grand Tour. Keon this week hasn't looked that amazing, so it depends on the progression of Keon in the next few months, what he shows at the Giro. He definitely showed that he's deservedly in the spot that he is, that he made some progression compared to last year, which he was already good in, like we mentioned, when it comes to Paris-Nice, in the classics already.
I'm not sure how much better he is.
I think
people are going to go overboard with it, like with Laporte,
for sure,
and be like, Visma to have given this guy one extra watt per kilo, and that is just not true. Like, it's about
a few percentage,
but also never missing a bid on, having the right nutrition fueling strategy for the stage, having the right clothing for the stage, having the
better
domestiques
tactics
around you. Yeah, just when the descent comes, your third wheel for every descent, you never miss a split because of a crash. Like, it is things, and then the network effect for Laporte and the classics. So when you look at Jorgensen's raw numbers on the stage eight last year, he was flying, but Poggi was there. But he was with Simon Yates, who's good. He won the stage in 2022. Yeah. And Vingegaard, he was with those two. I don't think I wasn't in best shape, but I don't think people should go overboard saying he's like gained one watt per kilo. It's like a lot of small things and just never having a major fuck up as well.
And like, I feel like we've had that discussion with a few, eh? Because I swear the year before Laporte joined Visma, he was already one of the best riders on the Paterberg in RVV, if I recall correctly. Wasn't he the second or third rider going on top of the Paterberg when shit hit the fan? Like, Trotnik, for example, he was fucking good before he joined Visma. Yes, he got better. I don't know, I think the environment breeds success.
Trotnik
as well,
actually
to
got
be
better. Trotnik actually got better. when you look at his classics. Well, he was good in Tour of Flanders before, but in Omloop. And you look at him in the other ones. It's more consistency. Like, you see that flash from Jorgensen in Oman on Green Mountain. Yeah. And in that stage 8 of Paris-Nice, that flash of top level. And then, but then for the rest of the year, okay, he was good in the Tour, but he didn't win a stage. And I expect Jorgensen for the rest of the year to carry, to repeat this level. That's the expectation. Whereas, and same with Trotnik, you know, he'd be flying and then you might not see him for 4 months when he was on Bahrain victorious. but they're already good riders. So let's not ignore the fact that they also have the money to and get some of the highly touted people. I mean, Trotnik, maybe not the most highly touted. He was in his 30s. Jorgensen, though, 23-year-old, 24-year-old Anglophone GC contender who can ride classics, highly touted rider. Maybe someone scouted him and was in there early. I don't know. But because they figured it
out
quicker.
It's also the Jorgensen storyline. I also find it pretty interesting, as in the fact that he wrote letters to teams himself when he was younger to try and get in their team. The fact that he tried to learn France when he did something for Argezero or something. Like, he actively tried to proactively think about his future during the years where he was already trying to perform at his best. For example, last year, what he did with Movistar, planning his own training camp, stuff like that. In addition to what the team was or wasn't offering at that time, that shows that you're not only busy with your current, but also with your future as a rider and getting better and trying to get better with every percentage that you got, you know?
Yeah, you're right. And you can't live that way for the whole season. You're sort of preparing yourself on your own like that. And it's also a money thing. Like, maybe Visma can afford to have more people handing out bid-ons on a course during the Tour de France than Movistar can. Or they have more people that can do that, things like that. It all makes a difference. I just don't want to see people ragging on Movistar saying, look what he can do on Visma Lisa bike. I think that's wrong. Movistar gave him the opportunity to develop with no pressure at all, really. Gave him leadership at Paris-Nice and other major races in the classics. And so I think I just don't want to see that. I think more just celebrate Jorgensen's development, and I'm really keen to see what he can do for the rest of the year. And you know, he could even win the Tour of Flanders, this guy. Like, he is flying. Because Remco's a good rider, and he was there with him every step of the way this week. McNulty, give a bit of shout out to him as well, because he did end up finishing third, really like battling, just fucking battling every day to hold back time. He was also sick coming into the race, didn't know what his level would be like. So really big shout out and kudos to McNulty for holding on for I dare say he's, I know he won Sicilia and I know he won Valenciana, but third in Paris-Nice is a major race result for a GC rider. So congrats to him. I would say that's his best World Tour GC result on a quick scan of his palmarès. Schelmer's are good. I don't think he could have had much more. And I already said Plapp and Jayco got to be very, very happy with that start for him.
I think so as well. And before we jump into Tirreno, I must say that every single time this happens, I feel like a stage race with a GC stage as last stage feels like better closure to me than, for example, Tirreno, where it's a sprint in a bit of a circuit, and let's be honest, not the prettiest part of Italy. Because, man, that looked pretty sad where they were finishing.
So Jorg shouldn't do the Giro, because right now, if he did the Giro, what would he be, third favorite?
I don't know, man.
He's good in the cold
bird
weather.
Bird favorite. It's different 3 weeks, you know?
It is different. It's three, not one.
Get out of here.
Three times as long.
Giro Tour Vuelta double. How about that? Now, on a serious note, I just want to see him in that Tour de France role.
Wout
van Aert role. He's going to be good at that.
How do you assess, as we move on to Tirreno, where you just say, okay, Jonas wins Tirreno, Cliff Notes, it's a sprint stage, he wins Tirreno, Ayuso second, Hindley third. Like, how do you compare these two races? One has longer climbs, others is a short, jam-packed, medium mountain fest. Like, I'm just trying to think in my mind, O'Connor versus what Jorgensen did, like, such different races, probably have Jorgensen ahead, but then it's the Grand Tour. It's just it's interesting to think about.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bowden, yeah, going over to Tirreno Benji sprint stage.
But
oh, yes.
Before we continue, it's also like he's quite skinny for his height, right, Jorgensen? But it's also like, it's not like he's going to lose another 2-3 kilos, I reckon, from his previous GC weight at the height. Of, what is he, a meter 85, 90, whatever?
190, yeah.
It's historically pretty difficult.
I know what that means. I deal in imperial in height. It's like 6'3", 6'2".
6'3 is 190, if 6'3", I recall.
Yeah. You know, my brother's 6'4", 6'5".
I'm 6'3".
I'm 5'7", 5'8", and a good day.
Okay. I wonder what that will give on the cobbles next week.
I got a big ass, so that'll help. It's really interesting and stuff to think about. But Tirreno Adriatico, San Benedetto del Tronto, Benji already slandered this area, saying he didn't like the look of it. They go out into the hills to the west of the. They're obviously on the eastern coast because we've raced from the west to the east coast, race the two seas. They do a hill zone of about 66 kilometers. Well, they come back into town and do about 75 kilometers, doing laps of about 5 laps of the local circuit, all on the flat on the coast. It's Italy, so obviously no crosswinds. They're illegal by UN convention, and. I was hoping for a big break, Benji, because before the stage, we had some sprinters out of there. No Binny, so Intermarché won't chase. Bauhaus DNF'd, so maybe Bahrain would get it. Merlier, during the stage, was like, nah, he pulled the plug. Zangler pulled the plug. So we had a fair few. That's about 4 different teams who had an option on the sprint who weren't going to help. And eventually we did see quite a good breakaway, Benji.
Yeah, DeMarchi's in there again, so he's hoping that Visma doesn't show up and say we want to win a sprint stage now.
He said it again, his Strava title again yesterday, said those who go for too much will get nothing. I was like, brother, they won the stage and took another 30 seconds. That doesn't apply.
Exactly.
He's fucking a minute ahead on GC now.
And also, in addition to that, it's clear that we've seen a change of culture when it comes to the one-week race, when it comes to the Grand Tours. That
I know, it's not a Grand Tour transition stage, is it?
Yeah, but even in a Grand Tours transition stage, we've had multiple days where we're like, okay, this could be a breakaway stage, but then Pogacar's going to try and make this hard so we can get bonus seconds at the finish line. So the Baroudeur, the breakaway mountain transition guy, their playing field is reducing, and you shouldn't blame the GC teams for trying to optimize their race and gift you a stage, just be better.
Like, I'm a traditionalist as well. Like, sometimes I don't like to see going for every stage when GC's wrapped up. Like,
I do.
I don't agree with it all the time. But in a one-week race, you can't be like, how dare the GC teams go for the stage win on the two mountain days on the Queen stage? Like, what? Like, what?
Anyway,
they didn't go for it on the other 5, but yeah, sometimes I don't like when it's the second week of a Giro. I like the breakaway having a bit of a chance. I mean, that wasn't a problem last year in the Giro, frankly.
Next to the marquee, Steinhauser Healy, so strong breakaway there. Rowe, Ineos is freeing Ro on his birthday. It's pretty cool to see. Happy birthday, Luke. Tiberi
Ro's in good shape. Ro is in much better shape than last year.
Are you saying that as confidently as when you said that Tiberi would do well in GC, but he's now 8 minutes behind before the stage?
Tiberi let me down here. I thought, you know, they'd take away his weapons. He moves
teams.
He's
out of the bag.
More time to train. The cat's out of the bag. He wasn't as good as I thought. All right.
That's a breakaway. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 riders. Alpecin, Unimax, Little Trek, and Bora are controlling in the peloton behind, and that's enough teams to get it to a sprint, to be honest. So we're now 15 kilometers before the finish line. We see a crash by Richard Carapaz. Actually, that was a hard hit. Fell on
heavy
his left
crash,
shoulder.
Yeah.
Looked whether he fell on his head or not. I'm not sure. I couldn't tell whether his head hit the ground or not, but his shoulder seemed pretty hurt. He was sitting up for a long time. Well, he was laying down for a bit, then sitting up for a long time. So let's hope Carapaz is okay, because I want to see him this year. El Jaguar de Tulcon. This is also the moment where the breakaway gets caught.
Is this his first year on EF?
No. Second.
Okay.
Because he crashed at the first stage
Mas
of the tour.
Him, or he crashed Mas.
We never know.
And then Nzue was like, ban all 3 week races. Fuck it.
Also, because like his rider is abandoned on the last mountain day, like Lopez back in the day. So if you don't have 3 weeks, Lopez still finishes.
But on that point, feel like I've seen a lot of people going down hard, crashing, maybe finishing the stage, or like, oh, they get up there okay. And then, for example, like Michael Leonard said he crashed on Instagram and then weeks later found out he had a fracture somewhere. And so he's out. And then Froome also has a scaphoid fracture.
Yeah.
I think after getting back up. So hopefully... because he went down hard, you never know. Like, we might hear later there could be issues, so don't count your chickens till the hash. But yeah, it's not a good time of the season to crash.
7K to go. Decathlon moves up, keeping Ben O'Connor in a good position. And we start seeing Unimax very vividly at the front then. They kept it really strong at the front, to be honest, Unimax. The entire time, last 4K, they were there. Then Steimler comes to the front. Then I'm like, commentator saying Steimler. I'm like, what bloody team is he riding for these days? 246.5 apparently. So he's pacing at the front for like 10 seconds before he pulls off. Bolti comes to the front for 20 seconds, pulls off. Anton Marche is in the wheel of dad. Alpecin stays on the second row, risking being blocked in, to be honest. And then eventually, with about 1.5k to go, they start moving up on the right side of the road, gets blocked in a little, then eventually tries to come around again. And at this point, it's UNOX on the left side of the road, Movistar on the right side of the road. Milan is in the wheel of Consoni, in the wheel of the UNOX riders on the left. And I was thinking, okay, Milan's in a good position. Consoni can drop him off. I don't expect Christoph to beat Milan here. I don't even remember who Movistar is here for. Is Gaviria here?
They got Chimalai and... That's it. Chimalai.
So they were there for
and
Chimalai?
And Garcia Cortina.
So
No. Garcia Cortina's kind of been there or thereabouts. But yeah, I don't know.
Wasn't expecting Garcia Cortina to beat Milan here. So I was like, is Philipsen going to get into a position that matters or not? And it all switches around when UNOX train. First of all, there's a Movistar rider at the front. They go into a left-hand corner. Movistar rider moves behind Wadenskjold, who goes into the corner very vividly. Christoph is in... second position behind Wadenskjold, but kind of he's expecting the Movistar rider to come in between. And what occurs afterwards? Wadenskjold gets a gap, right?
Yeah, Wadenskjold gets a gap. I don't know if it was planned from UNOX, because
I don't think so.
You don't think so? I'm gonna give them some credit.
Looked accidental.
Like this. Nah, I reckon it was deliberate by Christoph.
I think because... he saw the gap open and he was like, fuck, I'm not closing that again.
No, it's a left-right chicane.
Maybe you're right.
There's no way they think in a normal sprint, Christoph is going to beat Milan and Philipsen without something crazy happening at this point, even though he looked better today. So
I don't think they think that either, but they go to the sprint with Christoph anyway every time.
I know, but they're leading out. I'm gonna say they did the let.
Okay. I'll allow you to say that.
Worked. Well, it did work, in fact. Like. Wadenskjold goes up the road, he gets a decent gap, and I thought he was going to win. I really thought when Wadenskjold, because the gap was big, and he would have won, but for Jonathan Milan closed it himself, like two-thirds the way, he brings everybody back himself to Wadenskjold. He then pulls off, looks for Consoni. Consoni then does an incredible pull. I'm pretty sure I slandered the guy. for the height difference between the two when they signed him, but he does an incredible job here, pulling back and saves this sprint for Milan, gets back to Varnschgold, who's a really, really powerful guy. Christoph sees him coming back. He sprints early, pretty smart, trying to get Varnschgold's draft. I think that's a really, really smart move. And he actually, this is the best sprint Christoph's done in quite a while. And Milan jumps at the same time. Philipsen jumped earlier from his wheel. And Milan just beats everybody easily. Like, Philipsen had no answer. He tried, came into Milan. Milan gave him the big don't argue, like he gave Vinny the other day. Yeah.
Milan, you just can't push him to the side anyways. Yeah, so I don't know what people are trying.
Bounce off. Milan, really, really impressive. Looked like Kittel.
I think the most impressive part is not just the sprint, but the way he handled certain Varnschgold being up the front. Yes, Constantini is the MVP for what he did, but Milan was at the front of the group when Varnschgold was there. So he looks back and he's like, with his head like nodding Constantini to come to the front, Constantini bursting to the front. The fact that Milan didn't become impatient and start sprinting himself, waited on Constantini to close the gap for him, stuff like that, that shows that he adapted in the sprint. And I think that's more impressive to me than the speed, which is also impressive, you know?
Yeah, I think so, because if he leads out the whole way, and that's what Christoph probably would have wanted him to do, then maybe you have a different sprint with people getting a perfect draft in your wheel. But he wins his second Tirreno Adriatico stage this week ahead of Christoph. He did look much better. Cimolai third, beating Philipsen. That's a surprise. Like, Philipsen didn't look himself. I don't know whether it was the crash earlier in the week or what, but he did not look himself here. Anil Kovski, fifth for Covidis, Capio, Venturani, Lonardi, Venturini. Venturini is not allowed to have a French name, right, Tirreno Adriatico, and come ninth between Lonardi and Zanoncello in 10th. It seems wrong. It's a strange top 10. It's not the best, I'll be honest. But also, you got to make it through the 1 week. And Milan, yep. I think very encouraging for Little Trek that when they take him to the Giro, I think he already did this last year. When did he win his sprint?
Let me guess.
Oh, no, it's the second stage.
Ruin it, didn't you?
Yeah. but he looked good. He looked really, really good, Milan. And that signing's already paying off for them. They've got three wins, two World Tour wins on the board with him, with an Italian. Yeah. And they got to take it. In terms of GC, no changes in the top 10 from what I can see. Vingegaard wins GC 124 ahead of Ayuso, 152 ahead of Hindley. Del Toro maintains fourth, 220. O'Connor fifth, 224. Arnsman sixth, 225. Kjaan Erthbrooks 310. Kemner eighth on 402. Pidcock 405 in ninth. And Kevin Vokula on 424. Rounding off Tirreno Adriatico. It had the bigger mountain stages and profiles, but it was not probably as entertaining as Paris-Nice, with Vingegaard just doing what he wanted on those two stages. But he looks in good shape. Not much more to say. He looks in better shape than he did in Paris-Nice last year, that's for sure. Not much too more to say about that. And Ayuso looked really, really good. I would say this is his best 1 week GC performance in his career.
I think that's fair to say. One thing I do want to add is that I think we need to highlight how good Del Toro was this week, and how we can compare it to maybe the first years of Pogacar when it comes to riding World Tour races and so forth. Because if I recall vividly, throughout, was it 2018? 2019? 2019 was his first year at UAE Team Emirates, I think. The year that he went to the Vuelta, ended up podiuming the Vuelta. But when it comes to 1 week races beforehand, he ended up winning Amgen Tour of California. Was against Higita, Asgreen, Bennett. Not necessarily the mountain finish teams you'd expect. Got sixth at Etulia Basque Country. Forfait Tirreno, for me, I'd put on the same level as how Pogacar started in World Tour.
2018, you said?
19.
Oh, well, that was his... Oh, yeah, 19. Pretty good. I'd say this is better, but also Pogacar was dealing with... That's the pre-2020 era where people couldn't do any watts. So, like... because if you look at Ayuso's watts, it'll be higher than what Poggi did in 2019, earlier this time of the year, but then... in 2019, they weren't going as fast. So
I'm talking Del Toro, eh?
Like, oh, yeah. Sorry,
Del Toro's fourth.
Fourth, yes. I forgot. I'm confused. They got too many young talents. It's ridiculous.
It's better to me than Pogacar's start in World Tour in 2019. Obviously, Del Toro's unlikely to win the Vuelta, I would say. Oh, podium the Vuelta.
Yeah, we'll see what race he does. See what race he does next.
I'm curious too. But it's also different riders, you know? Pogacar was clearly GC rider back then. Del Toro, I'm like, yes, he can do GC, but he's also not climbing with the best from the start of the climb. He's like, he's a very odd rider. I can't place him, man.
Isn't it crazy? This time last year, you look at Del Toro. Go look at his results this time last year. He wouldn't have got a Conti contract. He didn't race until April in the Trofeo Piva.
It's really Sibiu, eh? Sibiu changed it.
Yeah, he was, even then though, he was 10th in Grand Prix Jasinski. Sibiu, yep. He was 11th on Balialac behind Martondina and Mark Donovan and Badilati. He lost nearly a minute to Matteo Badilati, like a journeyman 31-year-old climber.
And, journeyman.
And then, yeah, he just improved a lot. But even in Tour de l'Avenir, he wasn't the best on the climbs.
Yep.
Like he was in the individual time trial, Ricciatello put 46 seconds into him, and Piganzoli, he was in Tirreno here, put 6 seconds into him. Piganzoli yesterday on the mountaintop finish lost 36 seconds. Lost a minute 30, a minute 25 to Del Toro. So he's if he keeps improving like this, he should win the Tour next year.
I think it's unlikely that he does the same progression from last year to this year, because otherwise that would be ridiculous.
Yeah, but I mean, he's climbing, because even in the TDU, he won that stage, but it was on the flat, and then on the climbing, on Wollonga, he wasn't so good. And then Algarve, good in the TT, but on Foya, he got dropped. But then here on the climbing stage is really, really impressive. So a deserved fourth, and I can't wait. I mean, he's doing Asturias provisionally. That's a waste of time. Like, it's a waste of time for him to do that. He should do a proper race. Oh, World Tour.
Is there a
like
Nidal
Asturias
there?
Is Alarcón there?
Not anymore.
No, he is. His suspension finished last year. Yeah.
Does he have a team though?
No team. Because W52 got disbanded.
Would be pretty
someone
crazy.
Desperate for points next year.
Maybe Medellin can sign him.
Maybe. He's 37 now, but he still was good enough to win the Tour de France in 2019. In terms of his level. Seriously. Tirreno, that's probably you're right to pick that out, Benji. I'd say Aronson will be pretty happy with that. There's some good names ahead of him. Two-time Tour de France winner and a Giro winner, and Hindley in third. No shame in where finishing sixth. Probably would have hoped for fourth, though. Pidcock, good performance, but then that big collapse on, not a big collapse, but not a good result on the stage before, on stage five. Mas, nowhere. Gregoire, I was impressed with. There was no stage that suited him. Probably it would have been better for him to do Paris-Nice, frankly. In terms of the parkour, I feel like Gregoire actually got wasted at this race. I don't really have much else from Tirreno, Benji. Vingegaard put down a marker. And Pays Vasco has Vingegaard there, as well as Kuss and Tullet. Tullet was good in this race. And Pidcock's back there. Hindley and Roglic are there. But no Poggi, unfortunately.
Last question before we finish it off.
Remco.
When will Ineos win their first World Tour race this season?
Maybe it'll be quicker if they let Ben Turner do the tactics. They might be allowed to go on a breakaway.
Yeah.
What is it? Visma-Leaseback have 8. According to PCS, have 8 World Tour wins. UAE 5. Decathlon have 1. Alpecin have 1 now. Bahrain 2. Little Trek 3. Little Trek have more than that. Little Trek, don't they? Can I count? Skelmos are in 2 Milan? No, 3. Bora 4. Sudal Quickstep 4. Yeah. But it's also not just the World Tour ones. They have 1 win. 2 wins, sorry. I don't count the Ecuadorian national champs. No offense. They got a 2-1 win, which was a neutralized individual time trial on road bikes in Camino.
Yeah. Because, they could have had World Tour wins if Darling had the right schedule, if some other riders had the right schedule, but that wasn't the case.
Well, they don't have a sprinter. They got Viviani, but he's no good.
Well,
and then, yeah.
But with this team, you should already be able to get a World Tour. Sorry, you should be able to get a World Tour win with this team already by now.
Yeah. Tarling's the second best time trial rider in the world, so you just send him to a race that Remco's not at. He'll win the TT.
It depends on which time trial when you say second best.
Flat, he'll win it if Remco's not there. Yeah. Probably still beat Remco half the time. Yeah. So, but yeah, no sprinter, and you're not allowed to go on the breakaway. Well, then fuck me. You got to have the best GC rider on the stage or the best puncher. Yeah. Like, it's hard to win World Tour races that way. Ethan Hayter, he did Camino. He's doing the Giro, I think, but maybe he'll win at Romandy. But yeah, that's the Catalunya. I'm not sure who they're sending, but that's got Poggy there, so good luck. Anyone winning a stage when Poggy's at a race that's that hilly. Any other learnings from this week, Benji? Because we're not doing a weekly roundup, so we may as well... where's your vibe meter?
What the fuck are you talking about? Like your vibe meter
on teams. Like Visma and UAE, look where they were last year. They're both still there, 1 and 2, in terms of GC. What about that 3 to 6 range?
Well, first of all, if we take a look at Paris-Nice that just finished, talking about Quickstep here, their classics are not looking brilliant right now. Merlier's the key sprinter who's taking the victories for that team, so they can be happy with his performances. Remco should have won Paris-Nice, is how I perceive that side of the thing. Like, if Remco is serious about his Tour de France plan, then he needs to win Paris-Nice. So that's not just Remco's fault, it's also the team's fault and so forth. So in general, that should have happened. I feel like I'm not closer at all to Remco being that TDF competitor than I was at the end of last year in any way. So I'm still stagnated in that end. So team hasn't really changed much outside of that, I'd say, towards my expectations for the rest of the season. I think when it comes to Bahrain, I kind of expected Bilbao to be a bit better, but I think he also crashed at some point this week. That might have had an impact. He podiumed UAE Tour though. Bahrain really is one of those teams where I feel like we've mentioned it numerous times already, but I see them when it comes to GC above Little Trek. Despite Theo Gegenhardt joining that team, maybe Gegenhardt can lift that up once I see him back in like the form where he was at the Giro last year, for example. But this week it wasn't really there, and I can't really blame him for that because of his recovery. Milan's been on point. Pedersen's been on point. I think in the upcoming classics, we'll see a block of Little Trek next to Visma. Not next to Visma, but at least closer to Visma. Milan as a sprinting option. Pedersen and Stuyven as the attacking options is my expectation there. So I think that's going to matter there as well. What are teams existing as well? Ineos. I've said my tale when it comes to Ineos, first of all, where I feel like tactically they're not the strongest team. We've seen that quite a few times this week as well. GC-wise, I love that Bernal is now competing for top fives again in World Tour races, but that's not shouting podium spot at Tour de France yet for me. Carlos Rodriguez hasn't looked great either.
Bahrain are a better GC team than Ineos, in my opinion.
Facts.
Yeah. Like, that is correct. In terms of preparing a guy for a Grand Tour, GC and World Tour one-week races, tactically, Bahrain are better.
And in addition to that, then Pidcock, first of all, looked pretty terrible in the first mountain finish. In the second mountain finish, he had a good level, but it's also not a good level where you think, okay, he's going to now be that guy at the Tour de France either for the team. So I'm like, okay. I haven't seen a performance of the level of the
first World Tour GC top 10, though.
Yeah, fine, but there's a lot of people that can top 10 a World Tour race in this peloton.
True.
So he needs to be more than that for Ineos. Yeah. Then again, are we judging them too much on their road cycling stuff when half their team is going to ride the Olympics and then Pidcock's probably going to get something in mountain bike? How much does that give to Ineos? Because I don't know how much of the credit Ineos can openly, like publicly, get from that. The newspapers are going to write about Pidcock from the great British UK team, whatever, got the Olympic medal, whatever. Ineos ain't going to be in that headline. Like, what does that give to Ineos?
I don't know if they're on his jersey, but you're right. Like, he's on a Pinarello, So then Pinarello, who are a sponsor of the team, are happy, and it just improves his profile. And so I think it is a net positive if he wins Olympic gold.
Yeah, for sure. It's not a negative.
I don't think he's throwing his season for it either. Ghana didn't look very good. So maybe he has one eye on the Olympics. Him not doing Roubaix is kind of crazy, to be honest. I presume that's because he's worried about crashing. But yeah, that's a bit much, I think.
Other teams.
I don't care about the rest. Decathlon, they just keep getting good. Like Ben O'Connor, fifth here. They just keep getting good results across the board. Gold, top 10.
Yeah.
Top 10 both races. They got to take it. And I just found out that this is the first time the same teams won Paris-Nice and Tirreno GC at once, which I would have thought Sky would have done it back in the day. But anyway. Yeah, so.
With who? Because they never had like two.
Richie
godlike Port, leaders Rachel, at the same time.
He was riding
for Froome.
Richie Port.
He was a super dom.
True. yeah. I just thought they would have, you know? I just thought they would have. They had a lot of GC riders who were very good. Like, they won the Tour with four different guys in like 4 years. So you'd think, but yeah, it's an interesting statistic. It's hard to win. So Visma Lisebike got to be happy with how the season has started. But that's all from us. We are going to Flanders tomorrow. Make sure you follow us on socials. We'll have updates for all of that and little snippets. Both really looking forward to it. And then we have our Milan Sanremo preview dropping Tuesday night, but Wednesday morning, most likely around there, before the race on Saturday. And that's the only pod we'll have during the week. Obviously we'll have the Sanremo recap on the Saturday afternoon. So I hope you enjoyed all the doubleheader pods this week. And thanks to Join Cycling for sponsoring the pod today. And we'll see you on Tuesday night at the earliest. Until then, ciao.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.